Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Robert Wysocki, author of Adaptive Project Framework, Managing Complexity in the Face of Uncertainty. On behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Robert Wysocki, author of Adaptive Project Framework, Managing Complexity in the Face of Uncertainty. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Robert Wysocki, President of Enterprise Information Insights, shares with us his insights on how to deal with the often monumental uncertainty associated with project scope, resources, and time, increasing the organization's rate of project success and improving its bottom line returns. So now, without any further delays, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Bob Wysocki, author of Adaptive Project Framework, Managing Complexity in the Face of Uncertainty, and President of Enterprise Information Insights, a consulting and training practice that specializes in helping large organizations run projects more effectively. For more than 40 years, Bob has served as a project management consultant, information systems manager, and training developer and provider. His clients range from AT&T and Aetna to the U.S. Army Signal Corps, Walmart, and Wells Fargo. Bob has written 16 books on project and IT management, including the Project Management Institute recommended book, Effective Project Management. Bob, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Glad to be here, Nathan.
Bob, I'm thrilled to have you on the show. As we had a chance to talk about before we started the interview, I've been a certified project management professional for quite a number of years now. And not only did I enjoy your book, I learned a lot by reading it. So I think our audience is really in for not just a treat, but they're really going to gain a lot of insight. So I really appreciate you joining us here today.
Well, I'd love to have the opportunity to talk about something I love.
Excellent. Well, Bob, to start off, I wanted to ask, projects all have some degree of uncertainty. And I wanted to just level set for our audience, just frame for them what makes the Adaptive Project Management Framework approach different from the traditional methods of dealing with project uncertainty, and then what are its specific benefits?
Good question, Nathan. I think, first of all, traditional methods are not designed for uncertainty. They do handle uncertainty in a variety of ways, but APF, Adaptive Project Framework, was designed to handle situations where there's a great deal of uncertainty, and the more uncertainty, the better for APF. We need to understand first the kinds of projects that APF was designed for. There were projects that heretofore the organization had not been able to complete. They couldn't find the solution. They couldn't reach a goal. These projects are critical to the organization. And the setup of them within the APF framework is really quite different than a traditional project. For example, the client or customer specifies, I'm going to give you 6 months, Joe, and $12 million to solve this problem for me. And then Joe, along with a representative from the client side, and the two of them are what I call co-project managers. they work together collaboratively to try to find the best solution they can within the time and cost parameters that the client, you know, is willing to afford them. So they're looking for actually the most business value they can deliver within that time, those time and cost parameters. And that's what defines the, you know, kind of the nature of that ATF project. And it does handle things from slightly complex to extremely complex. And we can perhaps get into some of that, you know, as we go through the interview. But that would be a good opener for me.
Now, in the adaptive project framework, you describe several core values of the adaptive project management approach. Would you mind briefly describing what those core values are and then the benefits that they bring to the project manager and the organization when they employ this adaptive approach?
Well, I'd love to. Those core values are really the thing that got me started on APF. Its development, by the way, was done in parallel with two independent client projects whose problem situation required a very adaptive approach. Anyways, those six core values, the first two really talk about the client. An APF project is very client-focused. In other words, every decision that's made throughout the course of the project is the decision that's best for the client. And oftentimes the client actually makes that decision from among alternatives presented by the project manager. Client-driven is the second one. In an ideal situation, I'd like the client to actually be the project manager. Now, that sounds like preaching heresy since we're talking to project managers, but in fact, it's that client-focused situation that we're dealing with here that demands that the client drive how the project goes forward. So they're going to be making a lot of the decisions in line with or in alignment with what the project manager believes they should have as their decision space. The third core value I call incremental results early and often. APF-type projects, in fact, any kind of uncertain or complex project could be killed at any point in time. If that should happen to an APF project, there's no great loss because what exists at the time the project was terminated has production value. In other words, some business value can result from having, you know, terminated that project early. And sometimes termination is the best decision to make. Mm-hmm. You don't find that in traditional methods very often. You spend all the money and all the time, and then you decide what you built didn't work. Not so in an APF project. Change is a funny thing. There really isn't a formal change management process within APF. And as we get into discussing the innards of it, I'll share some more detail on that. But change within an APF project is really progress towards a better solution. We discovered something from having just completed an iteration that suggests a change going forward, hence improving the solution, improving business value. And finally, the sixth core value I call don't speculate on the future. Another way of paraphrasing that would be when in doubt, leave it out. In other words, don't think or dream or hope that there's going to be this in the solution and then plan for it. If there's doubt about it, leave it out. It'll arise later on in an iteration, and if it really is critical to the solution, it'll be put in. But until then, when in doubt, leave it out. So those six core values really define an environment, a project environment that's very, very different from those that would be generated from any one of the traditional approaches to project management. So it is quite different.
Yeah. Oh, it's very different. In fact, that last core value of don't speculate on the future, I guess I see that just all the time. It's like this black box, and people force fit it into the project, not really knowing what it is. It's very ill-defined, but they put it in there, and then the project seems to unravel all around it.
For sure, and that also is what fuels the change process, which is really death to a traditionalist.
Yes.
If you know what I mean.
Oh, I do. I do. Unfortunately, I guess I've been too much of a traditionalist in my project management approach, so I've run into those problems probably more than I would care to admit.
Well, I think one of the big changes with APF is, I stated this earlier, you know, you're given a certain amount of money and a certain amount of time, and your job is to come up with the very best solution you can given those two constraints. Now, you may not solve the problem, or you might solve it completely, but that's the best you can do for what the client was willing to pony up. They may change their mind at the end and say, well, you guys are doing so good, here's another, you know, give you another 3 months and $3 million, see what else you can do. That's very different than the traditionalist approach. Very, very different.
Yeah, because I'm always used to a very, not just defined time and resourcing, dollars or people, but also a very prescriptive solution to be implemented. And then you tend to always fall short then on either the time or the dollars.
Yeah, if you know the solution. And see, remember, the projects that fall within the APF arena are those whose solution is not known or has not yet been discovered from previous attempts, but whose solution must be found. We don't have a choice.
Okay. That's a great segue into the next question I wanted to ask. And in Adaptive Project Framework, you presented a 2x2 matrix. And on one axis, you had a solution and whether it was clear or unclear, and then the other axis had goals and whether they were clear or unclear. I was wondering if you could talk about the types of project management that go in those different boxes, and most specifically, where the Adaptive Project Framework fits in that particular matrix.
Yeah, let me give you just a smidge of history. Sitting down thinking one day, I'm saying, you know, every project is unique.
Mm-hmm.
Then why isn't its management unique up to a point?
Hmm.
I said, I've got to find some way of defining or classifying every project that ever existed. But it's got to be simple. I'm Polish, and I don't like confusing things. I like them intuitive. So after several tries, I finally came up with the fact that, you know, projects are really, every project is defined by two things, a goal and how you're going to achieve the goal. And I said, well, how can we quantify those two variables? Well, you could put them on a scale of 1 to 5 if you wanted to, but that wasn't going to be an intuitive approach. I said, well, clear and unclear. If it's clear, if the goal is clear, and how you're going to get there is very clear, that kind of defines what the traditionalists would think of a project as.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other situations, and that's what generated that 2x2 matrix. So APF lives in the second quadrant, which is the quadrant that says, I know the goal, that's clearly defined, but I don't know the entire solution, or maybe I don't know any of the solutions.
Okay.
How can I manage such projects? Well, I can't use the traditionalist approach because that says go find your requirements document, generate a work breakdown structure, and we all know what PMI would say you do after that. Well, if you don't know the solution, how can you possibly put a work breakdown structure on paper? You can't.
Right.
You have to discover it. And so that's what finally led me to building APF as a way to handle projects whose goal is clear but whose solution is not. And that's what it was designed for. So that uncertainty is a critical element of the whole APF process.
Now, Bob, would it cause any harm? And by harm, I'm thinking of added cost or maybe resources. If a project manager was to mistakenly apply the APF process to, say, a project that had clear goals and a clear solution, so a quadrant that wasn't appropriate for it.
It's almost like you're playing my straight man. I love that question. Actually, APF, if we really get down into the bowels of it, we don't have time in this talk, but it squeezes out all non-value-added work. If you go back to that, you know, when in doubt, leave it out.
Yes.
You're not going to spend time planning things that don't even end up in the solution. You're only going to spend time planning those things that you know are in the solution, and that's the part of the solution you know up front. So the traditionalist would build this entire exotic plan only to change it several times before you actually complete the project. The APFist wouldn't do, pardon me for coining a term, the APFist wouldn't do that. They would simply say, let's plan what we know is going to be in the solution and not spend non-value-added work time doing things that aren't even going to end up in the solution. Bottom line, you complete an APF project in less time than a traditional approach. You complete an APF project at less cost than in a traditional approach. And the quality of the deliverables is better. And we get into that when we talk about the collaboration between the project manager and the and the client. So less cost, less waste, less time, and better quality result from using APF, or you could have used a traditional approach.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's clear to you, but it's if I could prove that, but you can't. You can only talk it through.
Right, right. Well, and thinking about talking it through, I think our audience is probably wondering why I haven't asked you to walk us through the APF at this point. So I was wondering if you could briefly describe or provide us an overview of APF, how it works, how it's executed on a, whether it's a day-to-day or kind of an overall project basis.
Yeah, let me try to give you it. A quick overview of it. It could take us till next Tuesday to really get any details, so this is going to be the Reader's Digest version. First of all, it's iterative. I think everybody's already guessed that. And it is an agile approach, so I think everybody would have guessed that. It's got five phases. There's a scope, a version scoping phase. And I use the word version because the implication is there will probably be more versions than just this one. This is our first shot at solving the problem, so to speak. So in that version scope, you do things like talk about what I call conditions of satisfaction, discussion between you and the client as to exactly what would satisfy them if the solution would have to do. We write it up in what I call a project overview statement. It's like a charter statement in PMI. We know some requirements, so we go through a requirements gathering, requirements elicitation process, and end up with a conclusion that, gee, we don't know all the requirements, or we don't know the solution completely. That's what leads us to use APF in the first place. And then we plan things like cycle length and the number of cycles. So cycle length, typically anywhere between 2 and 4 weeks. You plan a couple of them initially and then add to that list as you complete earlier cycles. So we decide what's going to go in the first cycle, what's going to take us the first 2, 3, or 4 weeks to complete. Plan it just like you would plan a project in the traditional sense. We go through a build. We're going to build what we planned. And here comes the critical fourth part. So we've got scope, cycle plan, cycle build, and now client checkpoint. Here's the place where all of the changes that you would have made had you followed a traditional approach are viewed. They're held in what I call a scope bank. So there really is no change process. But as we do these iterations or cycles, ideas come to mind. The client says, gee, could we do this instead of that? Or we never thought about this. How about that? The development team itself might come up with some ideas. But they're all thrown into the scope bank. And during the client checkpoint, we do things like, what did we accomplish this completed cycle that we intended to? Did we do what we want to do? Did it do what we wanted it to do? What did we learn about the solution that we didn't know before we started that last cycle? What are we going to do in the next cycle? And that's where we look at all those ideas that otherwise would have been change requests in a traditional approach. Prioritize them, decide what to build in the next cycle, build it, and then repeat that cycle build, cycle plan, client checkpoint as many times as the entire time box of the project would allow. So until we run out of time or money, we keep doing those cycles repeatedly. The client might say, hey gang, we're not doing anything productive, kill the project, we're going to start over and head off in an entirely different direction. So an early termination, you don't have that in a traditional approach, so this is unique. APF has what are called probative swim lanes. These are swim lanes within a cycle that investigate possible additions to the solution. Hypothetical what-if scenarios are played out, looking for the missing pieces, so to speak, of that solution. And then finally, the fifth phase is the post, what I call a post-version review. Post-implementation audit would be the terminology that is used in the PMBOK. Same thing. Exactly the same thing.
Okay.
So it's those five phases. Now, we could spend a lot of time going into each one because they're quite detailed.
And one of the things that I really liked about your book was, of course, the book goes into detail on all of them, but you also provide all of the templated forms and the tools to use to execute each one. So it's a complete reference for any reader who wants to go through then and implement APF in their organization.
Yeah, in fact, that book itself, its origin was in a three-day training course that I ran for quite some time before I wrote the book. So it had its birth, so to speak, in the training and in the application. And I've had companies that have implemented APF, you know, as part of that training exercise. So they're using it, you know, within their organizations.
I think also clearly I could see it fall out as you were walking through the example or the framework is it's really easy to see what you talked about earlier about having all of those early wins, win often. You're always delivering. So if the project gets terminated, it's not like a traditional project. Well, you know, we terminated halfway through, and, well, we spent half the money, but we don't have any return on that half of investment. Here, we're getting returns constantly as we're going through.
Yeah, well, in that sense, APF is kind of a Scrum-like agile approach. Mm-hmm. You know, in a Scrum approach, you've got production code if you're building software at the end of every sprint. In APF, you have a production version of the solution as it is known to that point in time. So a project can terminate any time.
Right.
You've still got business value that you can deliver.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I guess I see in working with my clients is the important aspect that they would love to implement APF because they do get that return on investment. Everyone talks about quick wins, and they're always so afraid that the project would terminate early and then they'd not have benefit. And they're always looking for ways to get this kind of benefit out
as the
project goes on. Yeah, yeah. Now, Bob, I was wondering, since we've talked about it, and I know it's important for a lot of folks to evaluate projects as they go along and be able to terminate a project, could we talk for a moment in a little bit more detail just around that one point of APF as to how that evaluation process works? As I believe it's part of phase four with the client checkpoint.
Yeah, that's really the critical part of of an APF project, because you really need a partnership between you and the client. You both have ownership for the success of the project. And as I mentioned earlier, I even prefer situations where the client runs the project. Now, they don't know that they're running the project, but they do. But in that client checkpoint, you have to take a very honest look at what did we set out to do in this last cycle or iteration? What did we accomplish? Did it deliver the business value, or can it deliver the business value that we expected it to? What did we learn about the solution that we did not know when we started the cycle? That would have come from those probative swim lanes. And then we've got this scope bank where all the ideas that came up during the cycle got deposited until the end of the cycle when we could take a real honest look at them. So now we have to ask ourselves, is this project worth going forward? Mm-hmm. Is there still more that can be added to the solution that will deliver business value? The project manager must present the client honestly and openly with that information and let the client make the decision. After all, they're the ones that gave you the money and the time to do the project, and they're the ones that are the beneficiaries of, you know, whatever solution comes out of this thing. Let the client make the decision. Yes, this project goes forward, or no, I'm pulling the plug.
Right.
I'm going to give it more money because that can happen too at the end of one of those checkpoints. We're on a roll, team. doing great stuff, and I'm getting more business value out of this than I expected at the beginning. So I'm going to pony up some more bucks.
Yeah.
That phase four is the most critical part of this project. And in the book, I talk an awful lot about what if the client isn't getting involved? What do you do? Well, the project's going to fail if the client isn't involved. So you might as well face that situation right up front and deal with it. You know, maybe that's a workshop to help the client understand their role, because their role is at least as a co-project manager, equal in responsibility and roles with the project manager. Now, this is a little bit off the point, but I want to make a plug for another book. I've got a book coming out in October that's going to talk about the business analyst and where are they in all of this. Because in some organizations, it's that business analyst who is going to be authorized by the client to make decisions for them, and they will play with the project manager in an APF project. That's off the point. Another book. Maybe sometime we can talk about that one, Nathan.
Yeah, I look forward to that. So I'll be looking for that coming out, I believe, in October?
In October, yeah.
October,
yeah.
Okay. Great.
Now I'll send you some detail on it if you like.
Oh, I'd love that. And then we'll have another podcast if things work out. Yeah. And
I'd enjoy doing that. So that client checkpoint is really the the place where the decision is made to kill the project or go forward, and if you're going forward, in what direction. Because remember, we're searching for a solution that heretofore has not been found. Maybe we can't find it, but we're going to give it our best effort, and the client is always there deciding directions to go based on where they think business value will come. Not the project manager. They don't make those decisions. It's the client. And that's so critically important, because traditional approaches don't. The client role is very, very different.
Oh, yes. And especially with today's economy, too. I see the clients, or my clients, are even taking a little different look at projects. Maybe one would say they're scrutinizing it a little harder. I think in some cases, they're seeing their business case change because the marketplace environment is changing.
Oh, yeah.
And so now this gives them a perfect opportunity to recognize business value, but then have that reevaluation point if they need to go in a different direction. Maybe they might need to delay the project a little bit because of market conditions or just any of a number of avenues. But like you said, you just don't get that with a traditional project.
No.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of companies where they had projects that would be great value to them. For financial reasons, well, they end up shutting them down, and then they don't have any value.
Or, I think the portfolio is beginning, or project portfolios are beginning to take much more of a front seat, I think, because a lot of organizations are realizing that projects are really investments, just like any other investment instrument, and they've got to deliver return on that investment, so the entire portfolio of projects has to be viewed that way too. And we're seeing now agile project portfolio management coming into vogue, which is a very, very interesting direction for companies to take.
Yes. And I guess I'm starting to see it with my clients. They're building that capability.
Yeah.
So very, very exciting to see that starting to develop. Well, Bob, before we close, you have a website, and it's www.eiicorp.com.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of additional resources about Adaptive Project Framework on your website. I was wondering if you might be able for a moment to describe for us the various resources and tools that our listeners could find by visiting your website.
Yeah, sure. I'd be glad to. The impetus for that website came from a portfolio of assessment tools that I had built for use in my own client engagements. Mm-hmm. And there are individual assessment tools, team assessment tools, project maturity assessment tools, organizational assessment tools. Many are web-based, And the website that you cited has sample reports and information on how you can take advantage of some of those assessment tools. But that's the real focus of that website, is to lay out those assessment tools, and there's promotional packages that I can provide in response to requests from that website. But there's a great resource there. There's about a dozen assessment tools that I developed to support my own consulting practice and turn them into web-based tools that can be used with minimal training, in some cases with no training, by client organizations. And I've had, Walmart has used quite a few of those, Wells Fargo, Sun Life, and the whole list of companies that have taken advantage of those tools.
Yeah, it's a great website and a lot of great tools there. I'm going to put a link to your website in the article that accompanies the podcast, and
thanks.
Way our listeners can just get right there easily.
You bet.
Great. Well, Bob, I want to thank you, not just for taking the time to talk with us this evening, but also for sharing your insights on how to manage the many uncertainties associated with today's projects. I've mentioned before, I've thoroughly enjoyed the Adaptive Project Framework, and I have learned an incredible amount from your book. And I'm going to put the principles and the APF approach to work in the projects that I lead and manage or co-manage with my clients on a day-to-day basis. So I hope that our audience will take the time to pick up a copy of your book, and more importantly, I hope that when they use it, that they'll apply the Adaptive Project Framework approach to their projects, because I know it's going to help them to better deliver on value to their organization and their clients, and help them in their overall management of their projects and their project uncertainty. So thank you again for taking the time to join us.
And thank you for the invite.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Robert Wysocki for being with us today and sharing his insights on adaptive project management. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Robert Wysocki and Adaptive Project Framework at www.eiicorp.com. Until next time, so long.